Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Monday, the 26th of October, Cardinals-elect chosen by Pope Francis reacts to their new roles in the Church. COVID-19 restrictions are eased in Australia's city of Melbourne, while European leaders warn of a bleak winter, and strikes called by the opposition in Belarus go ahead. In the Vatican, I'm Lydia O'Kane. The clerics chosen by Pope Francis to be elevated to the rank of cardinal have been expressing their hopes and fears as they prepare to start their new roles in the Church. Francesca Merlo has more.
New cardinals around the world have been reacting to their recent nominations, some via interview and others via statements released on various web pages. Archbishop Antoine Kambada of Kigali in Rwanda says a telephone call came as a huge surprise to him and that he only truly believed it was true when he heard his name read out during Pope Francis's Sunday Angelus. "I had never dreamed of being a cardinal," he told Vatican News' Jean-Pierre Bujoko. "It was the Lord who wanted it." Archbishop Kambada is the first Rwandan cardinal in the country's history, being appointed 26 years after the genocide. His appointment, he says, is all at once a joy, a great responsibility, and a challenge. Archbishop Jose Advincula of Capiz in the Philippines said he had absolutely no idea that he would be elevated to the rank of cardinal. He did not want to believe what he was hearing, afraid that maybe there had been an error in communication. "There are at least three bishops in Panay Island with Jose as their first name," he said. "I thought maybe they got the wrong surname." "My initial reaction is the fear of that responsibility," he said. "If there is that feeling of joy, it's very small because my feelings are focused on the responsibility that is given to me." Father Mauro Gambetti, the guardian of the Sacro Convent in Assisi, first thought, "This is one of the Pope's jokes." When he learned his nomination was real, he said, "I gratefully and joyfully welcome this news in the spirit of obedience to the Church and in service to all humanity in this time that is so difficult for us all. This is a gift I will share with all of God's children on the path of love and compassion toward the neighbour, our brother or sister." Finally, Monsignore Enrico Feroci, pastor of the Shrine of Our Lady of Divine Love, says he found out he had been elevated to the College of Cardinals just 10 minutes before he was due to celebrate Mass. He said people were congratulating him and that he had no idea what they were referring to. He interprets the Pope's appointment as one not directed solely to him personally, but to all the priests of Rome. He continued saying that the priest is the one who gives his hands to the bishops in order to touch the body of Christ, which is the people of God. Therefore, he said, Pope Francis wanted to thank the hands of so many priests. I'm Francesca Merlo.
European leaders are warning of a bleak winter as resurgent COVID-19 infections forced countries to impose new restrictions to try to curb a second wave of the pandemic. More than 42.9 million people have been reported to be infected by the coronavirus globally, and nearly 1,152,000 have died, with the United States leading with the highest number of deaths and infections. In Europe, the picture was grim as a string of countries reported record increases, led by France, which posted more than 50,000 daily cases for the first time on Sunday, while the continent passed the threshold of 250,000 deaths. Governments have been desperate to avoid the lockdowns which curbed the disease at the start of the year at the cost of shutting down their entire economies. But the steady rise in new cases has forced countries like Spain and Italy to tighten curbs. However, there was a glimmer of good news. A lockdown of Australia's second biggest city will be eased after the country's coronavirus epicentre said it had gone 24 hours without any new infections for the first time in 4 months. Melbourne, home to 5 million people, has been in lockdown since early July after a spike of novel coronavirus infections that began in hotels where people were in quarantine after arriving from abroad. But with infections now under control, Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews said on Monday most restrictions would be eased in two phases from Tuesday night, which would give Australia's ailing economy a boost.
I'm very pleased to be able to announce that from 11:59pm, Tuesday the 27th of October, all retail will open. Restaurants, hotels, cafes and bars, they will reopen as well. Indoor, there will be a maximum of 20 people seated with 10 people per space. Outdoor, a maximum of 50 people with one person per 2 square metres. beauty, personal services and tattooing, provided you can wear a mask, will reopen. There will be a dark opening, that is to say, staff that are required to make the business ready for trading, and importantly, it's not just good enough to be ready, you've got to be COVID safe as well. Weddings will increase to a maximum of 10 people. Funerals will increase to a maximum of 20 mourners. In terms of faith gatherings, religious gatherings, and we know how important this has been for many, many people of faith across the community, indoor there will be a maximum of 10 people plus one faith leader. Outdoor there will be a maximum of 20 people plus one faith leader.
Workers, students and members of civil society took to the streets in Belarus cities today, calling for President Lukashenko to step down. The strikes called by the opposition went ahead after the president defied a midnight ultimatum to surrender power. Linda Bordoni reports.
3 months have gone by since the disputed election in which President Alexander Lukashenko, who has been in power for 26 years, declared a landslide victory despite the claim by the opposition in Western countries that the vote was rigged. Around 15,000 people have since been arrested during a crackdown on mass demonstrations in Belarus, and nearly all opposition leaders have fled or been jailed. In today's national strike, factory workers chanted slogans and students took to the streets. After having detained over 520 protesters on Sunday, footage showed riot police throwing stun grenades and more people, men and women, old and young, being arrested and taken away in police vans. It was the 11th straight weekend of huge demonstrations in the capital, Minsk, and in other major cities. Today's strikes were called for by exiled opposition candidate Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya, who has urged Belarusians to block roads, shut down workplaces, stop using government shops and services, and withdraw all money from their bank accounts. If sustained, analysts say the strikes could open a new phase in the crisis, testing whether the opposition has the mass support it needs to bring enterprises across the country of 9.5 million people to a halt. Tsikhanouskaya called for today's national strike just a few days after receiving the European Parliament's prestigious Sakharov Award for Human Rights. Pope Francis has said he is following the situation in Belarus, and he has appealed for dialogue, to refuse violence and respect justice and rights in the country. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Armenia and Azerbaijan have accused each other of violating the latest ceasefire over the disputed territory of Nagorno-Karabakh. The accusations came minutes after it came into effect on Monday with the support of the United States. Stefan Boss reports that amid the turmoil, prayers reverberate in a partly destroyed church.
U.S. President Donald Trump had proudly announced on social networking site Twitter that his team managed to negotiate a ceasefire between Azerbaijan and Armenia. But minutes after it came into effect, new clashes were reported. The U.S. brokered truce was a third attempt to establish a lasting ceasefire in the flare-up of a decades-old conflict over the disputed territory of Nagorno-Karabakh. Two previous Russia-brokered agreements, including one last weekend, collapsed immediately after taking force, with both sides blaming each other for violations. The new ceasefire was also challenged quickly by accusations from both sides. Azerbaijan's defense ministry alleged that Armenian forces fired at Azerbaijani settlements and the positions of the Azerbaijani army. It said attacks happened along the entire front, as well as on the Armenia-Azerbaijan state border, and involved various small arms, mortars and howitzers. Armenian military officials rejected the accusations and blamed Azerbaijani forces of shelling the northeastern area of Nagorno-Karabakh and other regions. Local authorities in Nagorno-Karabakh also claimed that Azerbaijan targeted the town of Martuni with military aviation. Azerbaijan's defense ministry denied it violated the ceasefire agreement. Amid the ongoing clashes, Christians worship in Nagorno-Karabakh. That includes believers in this 19th century Armenian cathedral in the town of Shusha. It was heavily damaged in recent shelling, allegedly by Azerbaijan's forces. But priests can be seen ringing the bells and praying for the victims and peace inside the damaged church. It doesn't matter if these prayers come from basements, houses or churches. All prayers reach God, says Armenian priest Andreas Tavadyan. To be honest, there are far more dangerous places in Artsakh, the Armenian name for Nagorno-Karabakh. There is a front line, which is really dangerous. This is our front line. We have to fight the evil. We pray. It's our battlefield. He adds, I believe this danger is not that important for us, no matter if we see that the cathedral is damaged. We know God is in all our prayers. God will save us. Nagorno-Karabakh lies within Azerbaijan, but has been under the control of ethnic Armenian forces backed by Armenia since a war there ended in 1994. The latest fighting that began September 27th has involved heavy artillery, rockets and drones. The violence officially killed more than 1,000 people, including men, women and children, in the largest escalation of hostilities over the separatist region in more than a quarter century. Russian President Vladimir Putin said last week that Moscow's information suggests the death toll from the fighting was nearing 5,000, significantly higher than what both sides report. For Vatican Radio, Vatican News, I am Stefan Bos, reporting.
And finally, a United Nations treaty aimed at destroying all nuclear weapons and forever prohibiting their use has crossed a crucial milestone, signalling its entry into force in 90 days. When Honduras ratified the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons on Saturday, it became the 50th nation to do so, the minimum needed for it to enter into force as international law. Robin Gomes has the story.
The ratification threshold was reached a little more than 3 years after the treaty was completed in negotiations at the UN in New York on July 7, 2017. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres greeted the 50th ratification by Honduras as the culmination of a worldwide movement to draw attention to the catastrophic humanitarian consequences of any use of nuclear weapons. The UN's announcement was hailed by anti-nuclear activists, but has been strongly opposed by the United States and eight other nuclear-armed countries. Guterres commended all the countries whose ratification of the accord, approved by 122 nations in 2017, has helped bring the ban on weapons this far, singling out the work of civil society groups. Chief among these is the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, which was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2017. Its executive director, Beatrice Finn, hailed the coming into force as a new chapter for nuclear disarmament. The treaty will become active in January. The 50th ratification came on the UN's 75th anniversary. Finn said the 50 countries that ratified this treaty are showing true leadership in setting a new international norm that nuclear weapons are not just immoral, but illegal. However, the Treaty on Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons is not binding on those nations that refuse to sign it. The United States and the world's eight other nuclear-armed countries, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, India, Pakistan, North Korea, and Israel, boycotted the negotiations that created the treaty and have shown no inclination to accept it. They know that even if it doesn't bind them legally, it has an impact, Finn said. Nobody is immune to peer pressure from other governments, she added. I'm Robin Gomes.
Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, be sure to check out our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. You can also catch the latest updates on our Facebook page or on Twitter. In the Vatican, thank you for joining us.